This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, Parsha Shoftim 5779. Welcome to Torah Anytime, guys. So now, Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Yud Ches. We're talking about the kings. And the Pasuk about the king says, V'haya kishivto al kisim amlachto. As the king was sitting on the throne of his kingdom, Mekasalos Mishnah Torah Azos al Sefer, and he wrote this copy of the Torah for himself, al Sefer, and a Sefer, Milifnei HaKohanim HaLevim, in front of the Kohanim HaLevim. So that's what he wrote. He wrote this copy of the Sefer itself. And that literally should be the translation of the word Mishnah, as in a copy, a secondary version of Ahaisimo. That Sefer Torah is going to be with him, the Karabo, Kol Yimei Chayav. He's going to read it all the days of his life, Laman Yomad, so that he learns Liyira, as the Shem HaLakav, to fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu is God. Lishmor Kol Divrei HaTorah Azos, as Chukim Eilu Asosam. He'll keep the words of the Torah and the laws and do them properly. So Rashi says that the word kishifto means if he does this, then his kingdom is going to be worthy of keeping around. The kishifto is almost like a bracha. Kishifto al kisei mamlachto. If he does this properly, then everything's going to be all good. And Targum Unison says the same as well. It's a bracha. If he doesn't have too many wives, he doesn't have too much money, if he doesn't have too many horses, the kisei, chaf stands for the what's it called? The chaf stands for the kesef, samach for the susim, the aleph for the isha. If he's not too crazy about those three things, then he's going to be zocha to be a tremendous king for a long time, him and his descendants for a very, very long time, or whatever. And it's obvious, because horses, as well as the money, as well as the wives, are detrimental to what you need in order to become a great person. When you're a great person, right, having too much of anything is bad, let alone things that could take up a lot of your time, a lot of your effort, and obviously a lot of ideas that come out of your head. That's the pshat behind it. So instead, how do you get around it? It's by sitting there and learning Torah constantly, by allowing yourself to be involved in the Torah, staying away from the three things that the king is not allowed to do, getting involved in Torah. And that's the idea, says the Kli Yakar, as to why it says a very kishifto he gets a brach over here. Rav Hirsch says, in pshat, the word kishifto means, as soon as he gets on his throne, this is the first thing he's got to do. He's made king, and the first thing he does is he writes a Sefer Torah for himself. What does it show? It shows he's not above the law. It shows that the Torah should be, I'm quoting Rav Hirsch here, the unalterable rule of conduct for his life. That the absolute rule is him learning Torah. The absolute rule is, I follow what the Torah says. Not what anybody else does, and not the whims of anything that goes around me. No, it's got to be this. And that's really his mission as a king. His mission as a king is to show the people that although you have to do a lot of stuff in this world, and you're not always able to sit down and learn, your life has to be ruled by the Torah. So the first thing you do when you sit on your throne is you write a Sefer Torah for yourself and show everybody that's what it's supposed to be. Tom Vidas, Rav Sternbach, says, obviously the chiyuv of writing a Sefer Torah is on every Jew. Every single one of us is chayav to write a Sefer Torah. It's a special mitzvah to be able to have, but it's even more special for a king. Even if he already owns a Torah, even if he's already written a Sefer Torah, he's got to write another one for himself when he becomes king. And the pshat is obvious, says Rav Sternbach. He's no longer the same person he once was. As a hedyot, as a regular person, he had a chiyuv to write a Sefer Torah. As a king, he has even more of a chiyuv. It's a different person. And whenever you become a different person, you have to do something a little bit different. You have to accept upon yourself the Torah in a different way, in a different manner. That's the idea behind it. The same thing is done by anyone, he says, who becomes a rav for the very first time. You were a person who kept the Torah as a student of others, as somebody who is out there. When you become a rav or a rebbe, it's a new way of accepting the Torah. You're now accepting the Torah and showing others how to accept it as a rabbi, as a rav, as a rebbe. That's the concept behind it. So whenever a person gets into a new position of power, so to speak, within the realm of the Torah, you have to write a brand new Torah. You have to write something for yourself to show how you're going to accept it in a different way than what you were doing before. That's the concept. Rav Schwab says in Mayim Beis Shoeva that of course kings were chosen to be kings because they had a tremendous amount of Yiras Shamayim. They had Yiras Shamayim. They were great tzaddikim already. How do you think David HaMelech became king? Now, granted, when the kings were further along, maybe it wasn't as so, but that's the idea behind it. So why do we have to tell him to learn Torah in order to gain Yiras Shamayim? We have to tell him to learn Torah to get Yiras Shamayim? He's already a Yiras Shamayim. He's already a tzaddik, says Rav Schwab. And the idea, Rav Schwab says, is similar to Rav Sternbach, but just a little bit different. When you're put in a position of power, you are a different person. When you become that guy who's in charge, you're no longer who you once were. And now, you need to do something very, very different. It's, so to speak, you have to chazer your Yiras Shemayim. You may have written a Sefer Torah. Chazer it again. Go over it again. Get yourself a new Sefer Torah, because you're not the same person anymore. Anybody who says to themselves, I will be the same, a person who becomes president and says, I'm going to be the same person that I was before I was president, that's a lie. There's no way you're going to be the same person. You want to take over a company? You're going to become a CEO of a company. But you're going to be the same as you were when you were the janitor of that very same company? It's a lie. You will never be the same person. And once you accept that and realize that and you start doing something different, that's when you really succeed. That's when you become successful. Not that you become a balgaiva, chas v'shalom. You have to remember the fact that you once were on the bottom of the rung and then you raise yourself up to a tremendous height. You have to remember where you once came from. But it means you have to act differently as a leader than you would at any other point. So says Rav Schwab, and I think this is brilliant, that's the pshat in Rav's tefillah that we say by Birchas HaChodesh on Shabbos. Now, I've always wondered this. There are certain siddurim that have it, certain siddurim that don't. We say we ask for Chaim shel Yiras Shamayim v'Yiras Chet. You know, we say the whole tefillah when we're benching the new Chodesh. Chaim shel Yiras Shamayim v'Yiras Chet. Later on, he says Chaim shel Avas Torah v'Yiras Shamayim. In some siddurim, it takes out that second v'Yiras Shamayim, because you already asked for it. You just asked for Chaim of Yiras Shamayim and Yiras Chet, and then later on, you just asked for Chaim Shal Avas HaTorah. What do you have to add on Yiras Shamayim? And the pshat is, because if you add on Avas HaTorah, and you become a tremendous Talmud Chacham, then you need a new acceptance of Yiras Shamayim. It's not the old Yiras Shamayim that works. You have to be a new Yiras Shamayim. That's the reason why we say Yiras Shamayim twice in that tefillah. That when you become wealthy, when you become honorable, when you get something different, you have to build up your Yiras Shamayim all over again. You have to make a brand new Yiras Shamayim. And that's the pshat on writing this brand new bracha. Tosefes Bracha, this Rav Baruch Epstein, who wrote the Torah Tamima, says that's why it says, the Karabo Kol Yamei Chayav. Kol Yamei Chayav, all the days of his life. Now, simply put, if you wanted to say all the days of your life, you would say Kol Yamav. Kol Yamav is good enough. Tosefes Bracha says throughout the Torah, we see the idea of Kol Yama being that way. What's Kol Yamei Chayav? Why add on all the days of his life? All your days is good enough. What's Kol Yamei Chayav? And the pshat is, you have to treat it in life this way. Always use the Torah to define what your life is about. Kol Yamei Chayav, all the days of your life, take that Torah and define what am I supposed to do. If it would have said Kol Yamav, it just means every day of your life you should learn. This is more. Make your life revolve around the Torah that you have around you at all times, that the king has with him. That's what a person has to do. That changes everything. That's the pshat b'yan ki chayecha v'orech yomecha. It changes you as a person if we do that correctly. There's an amazing halacha. We know that a king can't be mochel on his kavod. It's Gemara and Kiddushin, Lamed Beis and Aleph. He cannot be mochel on his kavod. If somebody tries to do something, king can't do anything. But a Talmud Chacham can be. If a Rav wants to be mochel on his kavod, he can be mochel on his kavod. A king cannot. The reason why? Well, it's because the Rav, I don't want to say created himself, but the Rav worked on himself, learned a lot of Torah, and allowed himself to become a rabbi. A king is made by the people. He didn't do it. It was given to him by other people. You have no permission to be mochel what other people gave you. You have permission to be mochel what you did yourself. So the Rav can be mochel on his kavod, the Talmud Chacham, the king cannot. He says the following, though. He says the most unbelievable thing. This is Rabbi Yehuda Assad, the Maria Assad. He says, if a king is also a Talmud Chacham, then his kavod is not really because he's the king. His kavod is because he's a massive Talmud Chacham. That's why he's in charge. That's why he has good things happen to him. This guy's a Talmud Chacham. That guy can be mochel on his kavod. Then he can be mochel on his kavod if he has both. Yeah. A Rav might be appointed by a community, but the reason why he was appointed is because of something that he did to himself. They don't appoint just anybody. He's appointed as a Rav because he worked on himself and built himself up. A king might not have done anything and still could be appointed as king. Meaning a king does not have to do anything in order to deserve to be that guy. He could just be appointed because something happened or whatever it is, something got put in charge. That's the idea of what Rabbi Yehuda Assad says. And the Chassam Sofer has another addition to it, but we're not going to say it for right now. But then there's another problem. The word over here, kisheves, kisheves, kishivtu al kisa mamlachto, kishivtu al kisa mamlachto. The other place where we see the word Kisheves is by Achashverosh. When Achashverosh was put in charge of his kingdom, he sat on his throne. It says Kisheves, not Bishifto, Bisheves, Kisheves. Chazal say an unbelievable thing. It's in Esther Rabbah. In Esther Rabbah, it says, non-Jewish kings cannot stop themselves. Non-Jewish kings want to keep going. No matter how much they conquer, they always want more. They can never say, I'm good with what I got. I always want more. While a Jewish person should always say, this is good enough. This is good enough. You should want to be great in Ruchnius, but when it comes to your possessions and the money that you have, you should be able to say, I'm good with what I got. Thank you very much, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It should be okay. And if you get more, it's an unbelievable bracha. And more, an unbelievable bracha. But that's what it's be. So by a Jew, it should be Bishifto. Bisheves. When he is, as he is, that's the way it should be. By a non-Jew, it's Kisheves, or a non-Jewish king, Kishifto. So what's shot by our king that it says Kishifto? As he's sitting, it's almost like he wants to become greater, etc. So there's answers. The Gan Rava gives an answer, and there's a nice answer over there, but there's a Tiferes Yonis and Rabbi Yonis and Eibshitz, which is brilliant. Shlomo HaMelech was an unbelievable king, an absolute unbelievable king. And he obviously did something which we know is wrong. What did Shlomo HaMelech do that was wrong? Too many horses, too much money, too many wives. You're only supposed to have 18 wives, even that's crazy. He had 1,000. Only supposed to have a certain amount of horses. He had way more than enough horses. Only supposed to have a limited amount of money. He had more money than he knew what to do with. But there's one thing about Shlomo Melech that we don't catch. Does anybody notice? How many wars did Shlomo Melech fight in his lifetime? Zero. Not one. He had in his arsenal all the horses in the world that he wanted to take. He had all the weapons in the world. He was making silver and gold shields and spears and anything he wanted. He had as much as he wanted. He had Shadim at his disposal. Ashmedai, king of the demons, was there. I'm sorry? Very good. Ashmedai, king of the demons, was at his disposal. He could do anything. He could have sent an army of demons to conquer the entire world. He could have done anything he wanted. And he didn't.
Maybe that's why
he didn't get any wars. The pshat is, Shlomo HaMelech was a king who understood. He understood exactly what it was, as Shuki just said. He knew exactly who he was and what he needed to do, and he didn't need to get anything more. You want to pay me taxes? You want to come to me to learn my chokhmah? I'll allow you to do that. I'll allow you to, you can bring any gifts you want. But I'm not going to ask you to do so. I'm not going to force you to do anything. I'm going to allow you to do whatever you guys think is the best thing for you. Shlomo HaMelech could have taken over the world. And he actually, in actuality, it's sort of like he did rule over the world. But he never, ever forced it upon other people. That made him a king who's Bisheves. And here's the pshat. The pshat is, it's Kishivto, and the idea behind it is, the sign of a true Melech Yisrael is somebody who's happy. Most kings are the kings that are going to be up there, and they're going to be like, Kishivto. We want more, we want to get more, we want to get more. And the key is to be a Shlomo Melech and be Bishivto. The biggest problem that Rechavam had when he became king after Shlomo Melech passed away, is that the first thing they said to him is lower the taxes. And he said, yeah, my father did so, I'm going to make it even higher. Because he thought that his father was doing it as, I want more, and I want more, and more. That's not who Shlomo Melech was. Shlomo Melech was a person who was fine with whatever they gave him, and it happened to be $1 billion. But he was fine with whatever. If they wouldn't have given him anything, he never would have fought them. He never would have forced anything. That's the difference between our kings and theirs. Noach, you had a question?
Yeah, but he never was wise.
So I agree. Now, although he obviously extended himself because he had svaras. His svaras were, I should be able to take over the world. And his svara was, the more nations that I'm in charge of, I need to have an army that would be able to be control of all of them. But he never used them. The point that I'm making over here is that he had them, but he never used them. He never abused the power that he had. Dave, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, he had them, so there is a certain amount of fear by representation, right?
Correct. There is a fear, yeah.
Firepower.
Correct. That firepower that was right there. 100%. But that in and of itself shows you something. That there's something to it where I'm not going to abuse the power. Again, I think the biggest riot of this, that Rabbi Yonis and Eibshitz is saying, is that he didn't use the Shadim. He had the powers of everything. Everything. And he didn't use anything whatsoever. He didn't use that power. That's the concept that I think he's trying to say over here. Such an idea behind it. Ayala Sashachar says, It could be that Kishavis is really trying to tell you, Kishifto is telling me that you're not allowed to do this. I shouldn't say not allowed to. You're not chayiv to make a Sefer Torah until you're settled on your throne. You have to actually be on the throne, meaning there are times where kings are not exactly on the throne yet, but they're not. It's almost like an inauguration, right, without getting the actual policies in place. Maybe you were voted in, whatever happens to a king, but nothing actually happened just yet. Sort of like November 20th versus, you know, November 22nd, whatever it is, versus January 20th, 24th. Whatever it is, versus January 20th. There's like that grace period. You're not chayiv until you're finally in charge, and that's where it goes over here. That Rebbe Starm just says, simply put, Kishav, he thinks he's in charge, God is in charge. He is like he's sitting on a throne, but he's not really the person that's in charge. He's not really the person that's in charge over there. Now, there's another drush given by the Gera Rebbe. I like this drush. This is a very good drush. Yerushalmi Bikurim Gimel Gimel says, anyone who is Eila L'Gdoila, you become a great person. If you all of a sudden become a CEO of a company, you all of a sudden become a rabbi of a shul, you all of a sudden become somebody that's very powerful, you get voted in to become a mayor, a governor, or whatever it is, you receive mechila on all of your sins. You are forgiven for anything that you did beforehand. The moment this man becomes king, at that moment that he becomes king, kishivto al kisei mamlachto, when he sits on his throne, he's forgiven for all of his sins and he becomes tamim at that moment. And it happens, says, according to the Gera Rebbe from the Yerushalmi, it happens to anyone who's ola l'gedoyla. All of a sudden you get a position, done. At that moment, you're a brand new baby. You're a brand new baby at that moment. It's almost like a guy who has a brand new job. You're starting a brand new life. It's a brand new life. Everything happened beforehand. Okay, let's forget about that. Let's start from here on in. Let's see where I'm going. Let's see what's going to happen over here. This pasuk is therefore saying the following. It's saying, v'haya, it should be, at all times, it should always be as if, kishivtu al kisei mamlachto, as if it's your first day on the job. As if you just sat down on the throne for the very first time. Your whole life should be about that. Granted, it happens on the first day they become king. So the next day you can sin and everything's... No, make every day as if it's your first day in your job. That Gera Rebbe is so good. Because I really thought, like, this is something that I had a Sheva Brochus this week and I didn't go. I was supposed to say this over. But Tom Vedas, Rav Sternbach, says something like this. That's the way the chassan has to feel under the chuppah, doesn't it? The way the chassan has to feel under the chuppah is as if every day is the chuppah. Every day is our first day. That everything that happened before, and well, you shouldn't forget about it. That's bad, because then you forget birthdays and stuff. But you should have it in mind and just grow and improve from that, because you say, no, this is my first day. It's as if you get a mechila for your sins because you're renewing your vows, so to speak, every single day. That's the idea behind it. Retain that feeling, keep it with you, and use it with you forever. And that's how a king should feel every day of his life. Kishiftu al kisei mamlachto. It's like, this is my first day that I'm on my throne. And that way, people won't get sick of you. People won't be upset at you. You're the first king. You're the king who's sitting up there. Okay. Next pasuk, it says, Milithnei Kohanim Leviim, that they made the Sefer Torah, right? They wrote the Sefer Torah based on what the Kohanim Leviim had. So I think it's pretty obvious what that means. The Chizkuni says, the Sefer Torah that the king is copying from, because the Sefer Torah, he has to write over a Sefer Torah, is copied from the Sefer that is by the Kohanim, you know, the Leviim who are in charge. It's from that Sefer. Now, what are they referring to? The Chizkuni says there was something called the Sefer Ezra or Sefer Azara, depending on which one you're looking at. It was the Sefer that was originally copied by Moshe Rabbeinu. Originally copied by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote 13 Sefer Torah, however that's possible. One Sefer Torah was handed to the Kohanim, the ones who were in charge, so that it should be by the Mishkan, eventually the Beis HaMikdash. That was the original, so to speak, that Ezra allowed all the Sefer Torah to be copied from by the second base of Mishnah. Everybody knew what the Sefer Torah was. And it was called the Sefer Azara. The Sefer that was put in the Azara of the base of Mishnah itself. It was the most accurate Sefer Torah we had since it was written by Moshe Rabbeinu himself. That is the Sefer Torah that obviously cannot be touched by just anyone. It was an extremely old Sefer Torah. But it was used to copy the Sefer of the king. The king would look at that Sefer and use it to be able to copy down what needed to be done. The Tzafnas Paneach, the Regina Rebbe, the Rugachev, quotes a Medrash Rabbah in Vayelech, and he says the following. At the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, he wrote 13 Sifrei Torah. He gave 12, each one to every one of the Shvatim, including Shevet Levi. Ephraim Menashe got one. One to each one. And then he gave one to the Kohanim. One to the Kohanim, to the Mishkan, so that anybody who had a possible forgery can check with that Sefer. They would check with that sefer so they know what the ultimate was. And obviously things could happen, right? If you're copying down Sefer Torah one after the other, someone's going to make a mistake. Well, they had one that was an absolute, this is where they got it from, and everything was over there. That sefer, says Sofnas Panach, based on that medrash, was written in Ksav Ashuris, our block letters of Hebrew, the block letters of Hebrew that we have today. The other Sefer Torah written in Ksav Ivris. Ksav Ashuris is a little bit bigger and a little bit more legible to understand. But the other ones were written in another Ksav altogether. This 13th one was written in Ksav Ashuris. It was written with Ta'amim. Ta'amim as in the trup that we call today. And Nikudos. So we know exactly what word each word refers to. Zecher or Zecher Amalek. It would have down exactly what it's supposed to be. Even on the Shemos Hashem of Yudke Vavke, it would have down exactly how to be able to read it, exactly what's supposed to be. That sefer was used, again, to copy, but not for regular copies, because you couldn't just pick it up and take it out. It was in the Azara of the Beis HaMikdash. It was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim for most of the time in the Beis HaMikdash. It was used to copy every sefer of the kings until the Beis HaMikdash was built by Shlomo Melech. When Shlomo Melech, that means it was written by Shaul, possibly, I don't know, by Ish-bosheth, and then eventually by David HaMelech. When Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, he wrote a Sefer based on that. Sefer wrote a Sefer Torah based on that. Then put this Sefer into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the Aron Kodesh. Some say it might have even been inside the Aron Kodesh. And became totally inaccessible. And from that point on, the Sfarim were not copied from the Sefer Azara. It was copied from their father's Sefer. David HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech Sefer, that copy that they had to make, Rechavam made his Sefer, not based on the Sefer Azara. It's inaccessible now. It was then copied from Shlomo HaMelech Sefer. It was brought out from there, and that's what was done. And it was Ganuz by Sanhedrin. When it was Ganuz, how it was Ganuz, it was put away by Sanhedrin. Where? I don't know. But it's mentioned in the Tosefta Sanhedrin, Perek Dalet, Alacha Dalet, and that's that. The only time they took it out, the Sefer Azara, this Sefer written by Moshe Rabbeinu, the one that had the Nekudos and the Ta'amim and Sefer Ksav Ashuris and whatever, the only time they brought it out was at Hakel, at the end of Shemitah. At the end of Shemitah, they brought out the Sefer and the king would read from it in front of the entire nation so they could see what kind of a Sefer they had, and then they put it away right afterward. Right after they put it away, and they never use it after that. That's an awesome, awesome piece. Now, what's Mishnah Torah? I said before, it's a copy of the Torah, a second version of that Torah. However, Rashi, Ibn Ezra, the Rashbam, Targum Yonasan, Gemara Sanhedrin, Chaf Aleph Mabei says, two Sifrei Torah written by the king. Not just one, but two. And when it says Mishnah Torah, it refers to a double Torah, that the king would write two Sifrei Torah. What did they do with it? Says the Gemara, one would be placed in a safe. It was Ganus, similar to what we said before by Sanhedrin. The other one was placed on the king's arm. It was put into somewhat of a kiss, like almost like a pocket. He would make it very, very small. And he placed it on his arm so he could carry the Sefer Torah with him wherever he went. And he would remember, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Sami, that a Kaddish Baruch was always in front of him, so that a king who obviously has a lot of gaiva and a lot of things going on, always remembers, the Torah is by me. That the Torah is by me. That I have to remember how Kaddish Baruch Hu commands me to keep this Torah itself. That's the idea. How do we get the word Mishnah, meaning a double amount? Well, we do see it. For example, Mishneh Schar Sochir is double wages. We see in Bereishis, Mem Gimel, Mishneh Kesef, double the amount of money. When Yosef put the money back in the bags of the Shvatim, Mishneh Kesef, he gave double the amount back in the bags. And that's the idea. The idea is the king should have it with him so that he always has Yerushalayim. Chassam Sofer has a drush over here, but skip that for right now. Why two Sifrei Torah? Why two? Why is one not good enough? Why is one not good enough? Yalkut David says, the greater you are, the more you're expected to take a role upon yourself. The more you're expected to be a greater person in Ol HaTorah, in the yoke of Torah, to machnir yourself and to knock yourself down. A king has to accept upon himself a double amount of Torah. A regular person can accept a Torah. That's that. But a king has to do double. He has to be more than that. He can't just be a guy who's sitting there and taking up the money of the nation, you know, using up the coffers and doing whatever he wants. He has to be someone who's much more special. He's greater than that. Such a person needs a double Torah, so to speak. That's the reason why when he davens, do you know this? When we daven, right, we just daven, Baruch Atah Hashem, right, and that's it. You daven two bowings in the beginning, two bowings at the end, and then the three bows at the very, very end, right? That's what we do by our Shemoneh Esrei. Kohen Gadol, would bow by every bracha. He would do Baruch Ato Hashem Magen Avraham, Baruch Ato Hashem Mechai Yameisim, Baruch Ato Hashem Akel HaKadosh. That's the Kohen Gadol. A king, once he bows, he doesn't get back up. He bows and he stays down. He stays down. He's got to stay there the whole way. On his knees, with his arms to the ground, he's got to stay there the whole way. At times, Shlomo Melech sometimes would put his hands up to the Shemayim, but that's how he's got to daven Shemoneh Esrei, because a king has to be machniah himself more than everybody else, because he is such a Baal Gaiva. Look at what he is. He's the one in charge of everything. He has to show hachna, anava, toward HaKadosh Baruch Hu more than everybody else. That's the pshat. He cannot do anything different than that, and therefore, to Sifrei Torah, he's got to be greater than everybody else. Rav Yashiv says, there are times, and this is the hint, there are times where you have to wear your Sefer Torah on your arm. There are times where you have to hide it in the back room. Now, it doesn't mean when you're on vacation, put the Torah in the back room, right? And when you're around other people, then keep your Torah. That's not it. That's not what Rav Yashiv means. What he means is something so awesome, so awesome. He says there are times where you're going to hear people arguing about something when it comes to Torah or Hashkafa, about God, etc. And sometimes their conversations are not worth you getting into. Sometimes those conversations, you're not going to help. There's nothing you can do behind that. So even if you have an answer, keep your Sefer Torah to the side. There's no reason to get involved with that. When you hear a 13-year-old kid complaining about how bad God is, when the kid has like $700 worth of electronic equipment on him at that moment, don't talk to the kid. Don't talk. Do you think that kid wants to hear you say, no, God is really great? It's not. That's a kid, you just leave him alone, you take your Sefer Torah, you put it there, you say, oh, I know what the Sefer Torah is, this kid knows what the Sefer Torah is, don't worry about this guy. That's not the worry they have to worry about. Guy complaining about that. But at times, you'll hear somebody say something who's really bitter, something happened, and he has a legitimate complaint. He says, I don't understand why this happened to me. And that's when you have to take the Sefer Torah on your arm and you have to say, let me try to explain to you what I know, what I can do. And sometimes it's really hard, but you have to show him the Sefer Torah that you have and say exactly what it is. So sometimes you keep it private because you don't think that that person's going to hear or get what you need to do. And sometimes you have to go out. But there are two Torahs, he says, two Torahs to be able to give to other people. That's how he understands it. Ksav Sofer. The Ksav Sofer says, the king is the leader of their nation. He's obviously the person that everybody looks up to. For that reason, he's got to be special. He's got to stay away from every single Avera out there. But that doesn't mean that he can't be a chassid in private. Here's the idea that people think. People think you have to show your chassidus, but when you're home, if you really need something, then whatever. If you really want to do something, you go ahead and do something. It's literally the opposite. Show yourself as a person who's normal, where people can learn from you. And at home, be a chassid and do something even better. Do something that's even stronger. Like, for example, there are people who say, oh, I would never eat, oh, you dairy. I would never do that, right? Chalav stam, how would I ever eat chalav stam? And then in private, they're pulling out like every Hershey's bar and like Kit Kats and Dunkin' Donuts and Krispy Kreme, whether it's kosher or not, right? And they'll pull it all out and they'll put it right down there and they'll fress. Because like in public, I have a persona that I have to show myself as this chalav yisrael guy. But in the inside, I'm really a chalav stam guy. It literally should be the exact opposite. It should be the exact opposite. Show yourself for who you are. Make yourself somewhat accessible. I'm not saying that you have to eat chalav stam, although Reese's peanut butter cups are amazing. But I'm not saying that you have to go ahead and eat chalav stam. But the point is, don't show yourself as someone that you're not. In private, do something awesome. In private, don't tell anyone if you're fasting. Don't tell anyone if you stopped eating a certain type of food. Don't tell anyone about that. That's for you. In private, you are the Torah that you put to the side, you're gunners it. You don't tell anyone about what you're doing. On the outside, you show yourself as, I'm just like everybody else. So that people will see you, they'll want to be like you, they'll copy you because you're doing the right things. You're doing everything that's awesome. You're doing everything that's good. And then you'll be a truly influential person. The king has to be an influencing person. But the problem is that if he looks at himself, he seems to be inaccessible. If everybody looks at him, he's like, oh, that guy, I can't be like that guy. Then no one's going to want to be like the king. Everybody's going to look at the king and say, that guy's crazy. I'm not going to be like him. I'm never going to be like him. If people truly knew who David HaMelech was, that David HaMelech was staying up all night long learning, that he would sleep like a horse, And then he would get up at midnight and learn for 6, 7, 8 hours straight. Nobody knew that. Yes, there were Talmidei Chachamim that heard at night the harp playing in Yerushalmi. There were people that realized that David Melech was a lot more special than he was letting himself out to be. There were people that realized that. But David Melech never went around telling people that, and that's why people felt so comfortable around him. They accused him of Eishes Ish. You wouldn't accuse a chassid, a great gaon, of being Eishes Ish, of doing Eishes Ish. But they thought, David Melech is just like us. He also has problems. He also has issues. And Chas V'Shalom, that's not what he was at all. David Melech wrote Tehillim. Do you need anything more than that? We say Tehillim in order to get our prayers answered. He wrote them. Does that tell you something about who he was as a person? On the inside, on the outside, he looks like a normal guy. And the Torah even makes him seem like a normal guy. Seems like, yeah, he did this and he did that. He counted Klal Yisrael, right? He accepted Lashon Hara from Tziva. Right, and of course, Batsheva and Uri Achiti. But on the inside, what Chazal tell you about David, who he was as a person, on the inside, what happened behind it? That no one knows. No one knows. It's so private that even we don't understand the chassidus of who David HaMelech was, of how great of a person he was. That's the concept behind it. If that's true, says the Ksav Sofer, that's how we understand the two Torahs. Take one Torah, the Torah of chassidus, and gunuz it. Hide it. But take the Torah that you put on your arm and show people how to keep the Torah properly. How to keep the Torah and be a person that other people are going to want to be like. And that's the two ways. That is a beautiful pshat. An unbelievable pshat. That's the Ksav Sofer. But the Tiferes Yehonasan, Rabbi Yonasan, I think, takes it to another level. Rabbi Yonasan Abshit says the two Torahs stand for Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebal Peh. And then he goes on and he says, maybe it means Nigla and Nister. The revealed Torah and the Nister Torah. There is no way, no way, you should show people what kind of a person you are when it comes to Torah. No way. You want to give them a glimpse, an idea of that Torah? You give them what you can. But any good Magid Shir knows, you're not spoon-feeding anybody. You're not spoon-feeding. That doesn't teach anybody how to learn. You've got to give them something and then let them take it. And if they take it, awesome. And if they don't, you did what you could. You're starting them off. You're giving them, you're whetting their appetite with an H. You're getting them ready for everything. And then you're allowing them to say, we want more. And if they want more, then you give them a little bit more and you allow them to get a little bit more. Says the Tiferes Yehonasan, there's the treasure house Torah. The Torah in which you keep for yourself and you keep that nister. The Torah Shebal Peh that you're thinking of, you keep that for yourself. And then there's the nigla, the stuff that you're willing to reveal. When I first started giving shir, it was years ago. It was 2003, 2004. I remember a Rebbe coming up to me and telling me, because I used to find the craziest things that I could possibly find. And I used to tell them over. And the Rebbe would come up to me and tell me there are certain things that are better left unsaid. There are certain things. There are certain parts of Torah that are better. And my line was, what do you mean? If it's Torah, of course, everything we have to be said. We should say everything, right? We should go out there. But I'm finally beginning to understand it. There are certain parts of Torah that since we don't fully understand it, it could go really badly if we try explaining it and we don't know what we're talking about. We could say something, and then all of a sudden someone looks at it and says, wait, I don't think that's what it means. But we're like, no, that is what it means. I'm telling you that's what it means. And then all of a sudden we're totally not understanding what's going on, and people are confused, and Chas V'Shalom, that could lead to even worse things. There are certain Torahs that are out there that we have the ability to be mastir. That we had, and that's what Rabbi Yonasan Abshitz is saying. It's not just the Torah of Chassidus. It's the Torah that people don't always understand. Those secrets of the Torah that we may be privy to, maybe we get a couple of them, those types of secrets don't always need to be said to people. That doesn't need to be said. We keep them for ourselves and we know for ourselves what they are. I once read that the Baba Sali, in one of the stories of the Baba Sali used to write down his Chidush Torah when it came to his Kabbalah. He wrote down his Chidush Torah, and then he would burn the manuscript. He never wanted to print it. He would write it down so he could remember it better. And then he would take that Torah, and he would burn it in a fire. He said, it's not meant for this world. And honestly, I never understood it. Never said, well, what are you writing it down for? You're going to forget it? It's the Baba Sali. He's not going to forget it. But I think I sort of get it. I think I sort of understand it. Because there's some Torah that you want to give over, and if there's anyone that's roi, you'll give it over to them. And if not, you burn it. If not, that's something you got to get rid of. I don't think it was a remez. I think it was an actual story. I can't answer for the Baba Sali, but I think the concept is there. Yeah, Dave.
How do you know when you're at the point to make that determination?
Oh, I don't know. You got to find your Gedolim. You know what I'm saying? Like,
first you're learning, like you're going and you're finding the craziest stuff, right? Like, how do you know when it's too crazy?
Right. You got to go. That's what Rebbe's are for. That's what my Rebbe was for. So even though I looked at it and said no, I listened. I calmed myself down. So no more werewolf stories or vampire stories or, you know, whatever it is. I have them. They're around. And if you hear me, sometimes I hint to them. But I don't say them out loud, right? They're there. But you got to sometimes stop. Yeah. I'm sorry?
You did before, actually. When you're sure you mentioned it.
I said something. Yeah. You have to archive it. What? How can you burn something? That's already a shy line of itself. But that can be answered. Ganus, how do you take a safer and throw it in the ground and, you know, bury it? How can you do that? Is that okay with? So what's the difference? There's a way of doing it where it is okay. Okay, let's finish this off over here. There is a basis stroll of gur as well, tremendous basis stroll that goes over it as well. There is a machlokus, by the way, what you write down in the Sefer Torah of the King. Emes Liakov, Ryakov Kamenetsky, has a famous idea that the Sefer Torah of the King, the Sefer Torah he puts away was the full Sefer Torah. Sefer Torah he kept on him at all times was Sefer Devarim. Because Sefer Devarim was all about, I guess, society and what you need in a society. And therefore that was called Mishnah Torah. Right? It was the Torah that everybody needed to know, the doubled up Torah, so to speak. Says Ryakov Kamenetsky, that's why it says the word. He wrote Kotzavlo is Mishnah HaTorah Zos. He only wrote down Sefer Devarim. That's what Yaakov Kamenetsky says. And the truth is, he's not the only one that says that. And that's why he read in Hakil from Sefer Devarim. That was the Sefer that he had on him at all times. That's where Yaakov Kamenetsky, it's a famous chiddush. He says it in three different places, and it makes sense. According to his Shita, it makes a lot of sense. But Amek Dover argues with him and says, no way. Because it says over there, Leman Yomad Liyira, as Kol Divrei HaTorah Zos, you should keep all the words of the Torah. Clearly, that's not just Sefer Devarim. So it's not Sefer Devarim. The Malbim says there's no way. Lishmos Kol Divrei HaTorah Zos. And he goes on, he says there's no way that there's going to be writing inside there that can't be. But Targum Yonason, if you look at Targum Yonason, it seems like he says that he only had to write down Parshas HaMelech. That's it. Parshas HaMelech, like four psukim, five is seven psukim. And he would write it down in a little thing and he kept that on him. And that's all he had to write down. That's crazy. But that's what he says. Das Zekanim says he only wrote down the Aseres HaDibros. That's what Das Zekanim says. And not only that, the Rishash in Sanhedrin, Chof Aleph Mavez, the Gemara that I mentioned before, Rishash says he wrote down his own Sefer HaMitzvos. He wrote down his own Sefer HaMitzvos. 613 mitzvos, and he put down everything that was supposed to be inside there. Unbelievable. But that is a machlokas. But it seems that the Sfarim say that we're referring to the entire Torah itself, and that's really what he put down together. However, there is Targum Unkelus. Targum Unkelus does not say that he wrote down two Sefer Torah. It says he wrote Paschegen. Paschegen HaTorah. Now, Paschegen is a weird word. It normally translates into a translation of the Torah. But that's weird. Remember, this is before Torah Sheba'al Peh was able to be written down. What did the king write down according to Targum Unkelus? He wrote a translation to the Torah? Did he write, like, the Torah in English? And put it in, like, a little thing on his side? Like, he had the first art scroll Chumash sitting on his side? Does that make any sense? But Targum Unkelus says it. He says that it's Paschegen. What are you going to say, Moshe?
He wrote his own Sefer HaMitzvot, so he paraphrased the 613.
Very good. So it could be based on that Rishash that he paraphrased. Very good. And you should know the Rishash bases himself on that Targum Unkelus. So he does say that. But the Brisker Rav immediately asks that question and says, how in the world can you write down Torah Sheba'al Peh? You can't do it. Even the Sefer that the Rishash says he wrote, it's usher to do. You can't write down Torah Sheba'al Peh. How in the world can you do it? If it's not a pasuk, if it's not a pasuk in Tanakh, you can't do it. How is he allowed to do it? So the Griz answers the question. He said, no, we only wrote down Torah Shabbat Chsav, right? Torah Shabbat Peh was said out loud. When it says Paschegen, it meant he had to know what it meant. It's a, there's a Griz, okay? Chsav Kabbalah suggests that although normal people couldn't write down Torah Shabbat Peh, the king, because he had to be involved constantly and know what he was doing, could write a parish. And he was allowed to write down Torah Sheba'al Peh. No one else is allowed to write down Torah Sheba'al Peh. But the king, he's got to know what the Sefer Torah says. So in order for him to know what it says, he can write down his own parish, his own commentary, his own Torah Sheba'al Peh, and put it on top of there. So it's usher for everybody else, but he could do it. That's what Ksava Kabbalah suggests, and then says at the end, but I never saw it anywhere. I never saw that anywhere, so I reject it. So now we have Akasha. Targum Unkelus says, Paschegen. The Rishash says that he wrote that Sefer HaMitzvos. But how in the world can you write down Torah Sheba'al Peh? How could that be? So I saw an answer. The Emes Liakov quotes the Rambam in Hilchos Tefillah. Hilchos Tefillah Perek Aleph. The Rambam says, you write down Mishnah HaTefillah HaZos. Mishnah Tefillah, not Mishnah Torah. Mishnah Tefillah. The Kesef Mishnah on that Rambam says that the word Mishnah means the Matbeah of Tefillah. It means the nusach of tefillah. And if so, Mishnah Torah, in our pasuk, Mishnah Torah, according to Targum Onkelos, and the way Rabbi Yaakov's learning it up, the way the Rambam's understanding it is, he wrote down the nusach of the Torah. When it says, v'kasav lo es Mishnah Torah azos, Chazal darshan, it's two Sifrei Torah, right? Maybe it refers to the idea of what he wrote and how he went through it. According to this Rambam, according to the way that Rabbi Yaakov understands it, he wrote down the nusach of the Torah itself. That's what it means by Paschegen, and that's the idea behind it. Boy, there's so much, everybody. We all know this, but I'm going to end with this. The Karabo Kol Yimei Chayav. The king has to read it every day of his life. The Chassam Sofer says a king should read through the Torah and he'll find everything in it, even what happens in his very own life. Everything's in the Torah itself. All he has to do is open it up. He has questions. He doesn't know what to do in his kingdom. He'll find the answers in the Torah. Not sure what to do? Use the Torah to figure it out. The Birkei Yosef, the Chidah, says in Yoredeh Kufayin Tes Sivvav that a person looking for advice should use the Torah to figure out what to do. You want to use magics? Don't use magics. Use a Sefer Torah. Look in a Sefer Torah, you'll get answers to everything you need to do. The Shevet Musar used to say that his Rebbeim, when they were mesupik about what to say, they weren't sure what to do, they would take out a Chumash or a Nach, and they would figure out what to do before they, by reading something inside and going out. The Chofetz Chaim would often peruse through a Tanakh while answering a Shiloh to somebody and giving something. Everything is hinted to in the Torah itself. If you have the right schosim, you'll find it all. In fact, the Gra wrote in his Sefer Tznius, a Parachas Dibra Maschol Bechlau, that everything that ever happened, has happened, and will happen, is all in the Torah itself. Even things that happen with an individual, not with a klal, it's all in there. Not only that, even things that happen to every animal, every bird, every rock, every table, everything is in the Sefer Torah itself. How amazing is that? And they say, the way the Chassam Sofer says it is, that's what the king has to find. Karabo ko yimei chayev, find it in the Torah. Find it in the Torah. Now, how do we do that? I don't know. You need a Chofetz Chaim. You need a Shevet Musar. You need a Rebel Yashiv to find in the Torah itself, to really find what to be able to do in such a situation. That I can't tell. But a king may be able to do it on his own. A king may be able to figure it out on his own because he's such a great person, because of the greatness that he has. Dave, quick, before we... Mark.
So people obviously write letters and put it in sequels of different Rebbeim. You know, they ask the Shilohs, they put it in the safe, they open it up and they read it. Can you do that in a Tanakh?
No. Why? There is something behind that. I mean, writing, I not for right now, but Shalos Tshuva Mina Shamayim is what you're talking about. There's, when I, Bli Nether, I'll try to get to that in a shir in 6 years from now, okay? All right, Shkayach, everybody, have a great Shabbos.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.